Project management is a journey, period. It's like kind of navigating through a complex maze, and along the way, there are practices that actually can be pitfalls, causing your project to not even stumble, but eventually fail. I hope you'll join us today on this live as we identify those potential traps and learn how to avoid them. Hey, if you're new to the channel, I go by the name of ED for you smart and intelligent folks out there. Listen, that just simply means it. Today's episode is entitled, Which Practices Are Pitfalls of Project Management? Again, which practices are pitfalls of project management? If you're new, again, like I said, I have a 7-point framework. After these 7 points, we out. I do have a bonus though I wanna throw in. Just if you stay to the end, and I hope that you do. With that being said, let's get into this work. First of all, quote of the day by James Clear. If you haven't read that book, Atomic Habits, I dare you to go pick it up. And I said I dare you because there will be some things in that book will change your life. Quote of the day is, if you're unwilling to adapt to the future, you'll justify the past. Again, if you're unwilling to adapt to the future, you'll justify the past. First point, micromanagement. Oh boy. I hope we don't stay on this one too long, family, because there's a lot of things I dislike about micromanagement. I could go on and on, so I'm gonna do my very best to control it here. But if I can't, I ask for your forgiveness in advance. So micromanagement, here's a story. So I was the first time in my life I have ever gotten micromanaged, and I didn't understand what was going on because it was passive aggressive micromanagement. And you got to be careful of that. You know, and what I mean by passive aggressive micromanagement, it was the type of micromanagement where it was like, hey, I'm here to help, but they wanted to check the work that I was delivering. And see, there's nothing wrong with checking the work that I'm delivering. However, there's a point where it gets to a point where you may be taking away the confidence of me finding out how to do it better. Here's exactly what happened. Here's the details that they would say. So I'm leading this project, and we were doing extremely well, and they were trying to figure out why was we doing so well. So because they were trying to figure out how we were doing so well, all of a sudden we started having leadership sit in the meetings. Now I'm confused, just like probably you're confused. Well, ED, if you're doing so well, why is leadership sitting in your meetings? Great question. So I'm thinking to myself, well, man, maybe, you know, at that time, I'm not even paying attention to it. I'm like, well, hey, maybe they want to take some notes of how we're doing well and see how we can pass that along to other team members on our team. But no, that's not what they were there for. They wanted to pick at what we were doing. Like, well, did you guys document this? Did you do this? Did you do this? And I'm thinking, and we're sitting there, and everybody, you could just see a look around the room of like, and why are you here again? You know, it wasn't no disrespect. We meant this respectfully, but it was like we're meeting and actually exceeding of managing the triple constraints. The triple constraints, scope, cost, time, and of course, quality. I mean, we were on top of it. We were documenting. We was ensuring everything was in step by step. There wasn't nothing that was going ahead of time. There were no improper changes. We were literally really, and I'm not making this up, family. I wish I could, and I wish I did, but no, seriously, we were literally documenting each step. We were making sure the team members understood the mission. We made sure that the objective was aligned. Matter of fact, that's what we went over every day before the meeting. The first agenda item was, of course, risk and issues. The second agenda item was the objective. Hey, why did we come here? Why are we doing what we're doing? So with micromanage, it's really like the excessive control of basically end up stifling in a team. You stifle your team because you take away the confidence. You really demotivate the team by nitpicking and saying, oh, well, you should do it this way, you should do it that way. However, if we are having success, then why not give us an opportunity to explain what we're doing the way that we're doing it, not just because you got to use every particular artifact. Here's a couple other points. What I also watched when these leaders had stepped into basically following us around in these meetings, it started demotivating the team. The team that was like gung-ho, the team that they were staying up later than they had to, coming in early, just executing. And they became demotivated. I was like, well, what's the point of me doing all this if all you're going to do is sit there and just micromanage me? I mean, that's why I always leverage that Steve Jobs quote when he said, hey, I hired you to do a job. I hired you to do a job, and I didn't hire you just for me to think for you. That's why I hired you, because you're the expert. So again, family, point number one, I did okay with that, I think, but we'll see what the reaction is. Point number two, skipping documentation. Listen, if you haven't caught one of my last videos where I said documentation beats conversation, and I truly do mean that, because if you do not document, all of a sudden everyone gets amnesia. All of a sudden they forget, hey, well, I don't remember having that conversation. That's hearsay. I don't remember you telling me that. Listen, when you document effectively in your project plans and in your project schedules and ensuring that you have your requirements collected, one of my favorite tools that I use, I'm actually going to probably do some training on that, is a RAID log. What is a RAID log? I have a video on that, but I'm going to break it down for you. A RAID log, that acronym, it's a RAID Q log, excuse me. The RAID Q log is basically risk, action items, issues, decisions, and questions. And reason why this document is so important, reason why it's so necessary when you're leading your project, is because when you're in a meeting and let's say some questions come up, you should be documenting those questions and having answers to them. When a decision is made, you're in a meeting and someone says, hey, listen, we're deciding to actually cut off that service and we're gonna bring up a new service 2 months from now. And you're like, okay, what date 2 months to now? Okay, well, it's gonna be December 31st. Okay, great. You document that, because what you want to do is be able to hold someone accountable for saying, hey, I remember when we had this meeting on February 12th, you told me that this was what was about to happen. Did we complete that? Well, no, I didn't. Well, I documented on this RAID log that you said you was. Oh, I remember that conversation. So family, having proper documentation ensures, as a matter of fact, enhances accountability, ensuring everyone knows what the expectation is. There's no guessing, there's no, oh, well, what am I supposed to be doing? Nope, everybody has a understanding and is agreed upon. Let's move on to point number three. Weak communication, what does that mean? Having ineffective communication among team members, stakeholders, as well as leading with poor results by having misunderstanding within your team. When, you know, I always say all conflicts are not bad, but some conflicts are not good because of weak communication. Effective communication is really, in project management, is the backbone to have a successful project. Listen, everybody doesn't communicate the same way that you do, meaning that someone may want to email, someone may want you to call them, someone may want you to ping them in Teams. You have to find out what your stakeholder sweet spot is and leverage that effectively, because this is the way that they communicate. When poor communication comes into play, it results in missed deadlines, it results in wasted effort, it results in peer stakeholder frustration. And when you have frustration, as you know, frustration comes from expectation. When you have certain expectation of what is supposed to happen and it does not happen, this is where frustration plays a part in it. Let's move on to four, decision-making. Listen, I said decision-making, lack of stakeholder engagement. My apologies, lack of stakeholder engagement. See, when there's a lack of stakeholder engagement, meaning you're sidelining certain stakeholders or you're ignoring what they're saying, this can really truly lead to misalignment, because as we know, the true definition, or I shouldn't say the true definition, or I remixed the true definition, the true definition of a remix by ED with his remix of saying of having a great project is really around ensuring that the team understands what we're supposed to be doing and how we're moving forward. Because when you don't do this, this is when project goals are not met. I don't understand why people want to keep other people out the project when we need those people in the project. You should be calling on everybody at the beginning of the project. That's why it's important to have a stakeholder register. That's why it's important to have a project charter. Okay, I'm going on a tangent, but I'm really trying to make sure you understand is that when you have a lack of stakeholder engagement, you don't know this, but you will actually disengage other stakeholders because they'll be frustrated thinking like, well, why is John not in this meeting or part of this project when I need to work with him in order to finish my piece that I need to finish. So family, make sure that when you are leading a project that you're trying to get as many stakeholders as possible. It's better to get as many as you need and then downsize from that, because if they don't need to be part of it, great. Or if you need to bring in a more of a phased approach, you need to do that as well. Let's move on to point number five. Man, listen, let me say this. I don't know why, and I've been guilty of this plenty of times, because you're just moving, and you forget to document your lessons learned along the way. See, so what most project managers do, and I'm guilty of it, so I'm not pointing fingers at you, I'm pointing fingers at all of us, is that we wait to the end and then we have this big learning lesson type meeting and we say, hey, what went well, what didn't go well, what can we improve on, and blah, blah, blah. But that's not really effective. Let me give more context. It's effective to a point of that you've been documenting along the way, because what I've learned over time in my decade of being in this thing we love called project management is that many times we forget some of the things that we went through on the project because we've solved them and we were just so glad to move on that we forgot to document. Man, that's a good lesson. That may be something that either we can learn in the future or a future project manager can learn. So that's why it's important to have your OPAs. What is that? Organizational process assets. So that's important that we have that stored away, because what we're missing out is an opportunity to learn from our past mistakes. And being able to learn from our past mistakes or the mistakes of others will allow us to be better as project managers. Must move on to point number six. Inflexible planning. Listen, when you are if you're working in a methodology of a waterfall, which is a predictive, we understand it's step by step by step. However, if the plan is not working, we have to have the courage to stand up and say, listen, this plan is not working. We need to re-baseline our schedule. We need to re-baseline our scope. We need to re-baseline, even if we have to re-baseline the cost in a sense. And what I mean by re-baselining is we need to do a temperature check. That's it. And doing a temperature check, you know, it's allow us to really say, what do we need to adjust and get rid of or add to? Because the way that we're going is not effective enough. It's not planning, you know, I'm huge on planning, you know, and you know my motto is and I just need to find the person that said it. If you plan to fail, you fail to plan, because I really truly believe that. But sometimes people get so caught up in their plan that when their plan is under attack and is not working, they still want to stick with it. Why? Why are we still sticking with it? It's not working. We need to make a change. We need to pivot. We need to adapt. We need to be adaptable. Let's move on to point number seven. Inadequate resource allocation. Listen, you know, when we looked at the Iron Triangle, I may have to make a pitch to PMI and say, hey, PMI, I understand the Iron Triangle is around cost, which is very important. Time is extremely important, because that's an element you can't get back. Scope, yes, that is important. The quality, that's important. But we might as well add one more there, and that is resource constraints. I don't know how many projects that I've led where in leading those projects, resources were stretched thin because they were working multiple projects, part of multiple projects as stakeholders. And so whatever ones, you know, they just list down the projects they're working on, and then whatever is the priority that week or that day, that's where they're giving most of their attention. And that doesn't help to have a successful project, because the talent that is on that project, meaning the stakeholders, it can really hinder, matter of fact, compromise the project that you're leading, because people are being pulled in so many different directions. It's like, oh, what did we talk about again? Oh, that's not the same thing we talked about. Oh, that's a different project. And honestly, if we're really being honest, it can really affect that triple constraints around the Iron Triangle, what I just mentioned, because if we do not, if we're having resources pulled in every different direction, how can they focus on the thing? That's why I love Gary Keller's book, The One Thing, and I mentioned that book before, because there's no such thing as multitasking. I think I'm always thinking, yeah, I can multitask, but it's never effective, because I'm doing two or three different things. And if I just took energy and time to say, okay, I'm focused on this, when I get this accomplished, I'll move on to the next thing. Instead of just splitting my time out between two and three things where then nothing gets done. So how is that effective? So I'll leave you with that. Oh, I do have a bonus, because you know I couldn't forget about the scope. So point number eight, and the last and final point, is scope creep acceptance. Family, we have to stop allowing scope creep without proper evaluation and change control in place. Because if we don't, the project, what did my grandma say, would go on willy-nilly. And allowing scope creep without proper evaluation, it leads to project expansion. Project expansion meaning that you started with a small item, and now it's so huge, it's all of everything is just out of pocket, meaning that your costs went up. Now you have the project is longer in time. The quality of the project is not as impactful as it once was. And then of course the scope is you don't have a defined scope. So family, I'll leave you with that. I hope today really touched you as far as or about really paying attention to the practices of pitfalls in project management. I'm your boy ED. Until next time, I'm out.